Iambic Audiobooks and Unbridled Books present Perdido by Rick Colligman, read by Charles Bice. Prologue.
The nigger came to Guadalupe in the summer of the year 1946,
Telesphore Ruiz said. It was hot and dry, and the rains that came each summer to Guadalupe and moved black with speed over the valley had not yet arrived. The fields were wet only with water from the ditches, which ran full from the heavy snows the winter before. He came to Guadalupe from the south. The road was not paved then, and in the spring, when the ground thawed, it was not a road at all, but only mud. On that day in July, with no rain, the man walked loosely on the hard-packed adobe, as though that were all he had ever done. He was tall and thin, and carried a worn canvas bag over his shoulder. His dark clothes were baggy on his frame and too heavy for the season. The face shadowed beneath his cap was weathered and thick-featured. He stared at the ground as he walked, as if he thought it might have something to say, although he was no longer interested in what that might be. At times, he would swing the bag off his shoulder and carry it in his right hand, as he was doing when the first person in Guadalupe saw him. A young boy named Gilfredo Vigil, who was in a field throwing rocks at his grandfather's cows. Gilfredo could see that this man's right arm hung 4 inches longer than his left, and that the skin of his face and hands was black. Telesfor Ruiz told Will that he remembered the year the nigger came because it was also the year Eduardo Munoz froze to death near the church and wasn't found until the snow melted in the spring. Eduardo, an old man whose mind had always been like that of a child, lived with his sister. Each morning Eduardo would walk the long distance from his sister's house to Felix's cafe. There he would sit, drinking coffee by himself, talking to no one, and look out the window at the village. After 3 cups of coffee, he would rise hurriedly from the table as though he had heard a voice, and return home. Sometimes, if the cafe was quiet, Felix Garcia would watch the old man walk down the hill into the valley. Eduardo would walk with his head bent, his arms stiff at his sides, but for an old man he walked quickly with a purpose no one understood. On the day Eduardo froze to death, the wind blew harshly from the north. Eduardo stood at the window in his sister's house dressed in rubber boots, watching the January wind blow the snow sideways. He could feel it touch the back of his hand as it came through the cracks around the frame of the glass. When his sister Lucinda came from bed an hour later, she found her house empty. By then her older brother was already dead. When Eduardo reached the church, only a few hundred yards from Felix's cafe, his face was burnt red from the wind, and his ears were the color of chalk. Although Eduardo's feet still moved, he was walking in place. The wind inside his clothes pressed on his chest, and his body felt as though it had been taken with fever. He took off his coat and shirt, pulled off his boots, and sat down in the snow. Before him, he could see hundreds of small birds the color of the snow. Each one made a noise just louder than the wind. Eduardo watched them as they hopped onto his legs and sat on his bare feet and crowded together in his lap. After a while, he lay gently on his side, careful not to crush them. He closed his eyes and thought that the sound of these birds was something he had heard before. Eduardo lay lost in the snow for almost 2 months. One night in early March, when the weather that winter had finally broken, Father Jerome was returning to the church after visiting Guadalupita Garcia. Guadalupita had been near death for 3 years and had spent that time praying incessantly in a language not even she knew, and summoning the priest to her home. There, Father Jerome would sit by her bed, staring at the white adobe wall and wondering when this old woman, who spoke such strange words, would die and leave him in peace. As he neared the church, he stumbled off the path and into the snow. When he looked up, he saw in the moonlight the half-naked body of Eduardo Munoz, curled about itself. The old man's eyes were closed, and on his face was a smile. It was the summer of that year, Telesfor Ruiz told Will, that the nigger came to Guadalupe. He stayed in Guadalupe for 7 years. On the day he arrived, he walked through the village without a glance about him, And just past Felix's cafe, he suddenly cut off the road, through the fields to a house near the base of the foothills that had sat empty for more than 20 years. Gilfredo Vigil, distracted from throwing stones at his grandfather's cows, had followed the stranger through the village, trailing far behind as if this man were an animal that he had never seen before and he were unsure whether it could be trusted. Gilfredo stood in the sagebrush and watched the man push open the door of the house and then lower his head and walk inside. Soon after, Gilfredo saw smoke coming from the stovepipe. Only 11 years old and living with too many older sisters, he thought that this village, which had always been the same to him, had changed in a moment. The nigger's name was Madewell Brown, and he moved into the house that had once belonged to Antonio Montoya, who had long ago left the village. No one in Guadalupe knew how Madewell had come to choose this house, and since he kept to himself and also because most people were uneasy in his presence, this was a question never asked. He lived there as though it were his. Horacio Medina, who owned many head of cattle and much of the better pasture land in Guadalupe, was the only person to try to start trouble with Madewell Brown. He went to Tito's bar one night in August and bought whiskey for everyone, a thing he was never known to do. Then he said that this village was not a place for someone, especially a nigger, who had appeared from nowhere and moved into the Montoya house as if he owned it, which he didn't. Horatio bought some more whiskey and said that what they should do was walk to Madewell Brown's house and show him what was what. Alfonso Vigil, who had been in the bar since the day before, celebrating the birth of his 14th granddaughter, raised his head and in a voice like gravel and with eyes that had turned bleary and red, said that if anyone's house should be burned, it should be Horatio Medina's, as it was he who had cheated the people of Guadalupe whenever given the opportunity. And besides, Alfonso went on, it was too late in the evening to go to the nigger's house. They would only disturb him. In the years that Madewell Brown lived in Guadalupe, the only person to come to know him at all was Felix Garcia. On the first of every month before dawn, Madewell would walk to the back door of the cafe and Felix would sell him beans and flour and meat. As Felix, too, was a man who kept to himself, much of their dealings were done in silence. But on days when the weather was poor, Madewell would duck his head and step inside. Felix would look at this man and wonder how someone like him had come to this place. Madewell told Felix that although he once had a family, it was now scattered about as if blown. One day he had packed his belongings in his bag and begun walking. He said he had spent his life always moving with others like himself and that, in the end, it had come to nothing. He said that he had stopped in Guadalupe because when he first saw the village, he thought that it had the feel of having been here forever and would look no different in 100 years. And also, when he walked down the hill, he could see a small boy in a field running about as if being chased and throwing rocks at cows. Felix, who knew Gilfredo Vigil, threw stones at everything from chickens to open windows to his older sisters, thought that if he had seen someone like Gilfredo, it would have been a good reason to keep on walking, not to stop. If it occurred to Felix to ask why Madewell had moved into the house that had once belonged to Antonio Montoya, he never asked. Felix took Madewell's money and gave him food in return, and they stood outside the cafe each month as though it were something the two of them had done forever. Madewell Brown became like a shadow living in the village, someone who had moved into its midst from the outside and then closed himself away. He hauled water from the ditch that ran through the field next to his house, and in the winter he melted snow. Sometimes he would be seen gathering firewood, branches of pinyon and cedar in the foothills. Those who saw him would think of a wild animal that had grown old and moved slowly, no longer concerned about whether it were seen. But for the most part, he stayed inside his house, doing no one knew what. One morning, when Madewell Brown came to Felix's cafe, he carried his canvas bag and was dressed in the same clothes he had worn when he arrived years ago. It was summer, and the sun had not yet risen. The sky was only pale to the east. When Felix saw him, he knew that this man was leaving Guadalupe, and that although he had met him every month for years, he knew almost nothing about him. For a moment, neither man spoke. Then Felix, a quiet man with little sense of humor, said he had always thought Madewell was too sensible to take a walk on a day that promised to be so hot. Madewell leaned close to Felix and said he had once been the father of 6 children, who had all come to nothing, like himself. He knew their names and their faces, but that was all. He told Felix that when he was born, his father, who worked with his hands and his back and died too early, had given him the name he carried so that what he did in life would go well. Then Madewell Brown said he was leaving Guadalupe now, because there was no longer anything here for him. He also said he had left something in his house that he wished Felix to see. Gilfredo Vigil was the last person in Guadalupe to see Madewell Brown. He was in his grandfather's field irrigating, and he was no longer a young boy, but a young man. As he worked the shovel, he watched Madewell walk through the village, up the hill, and out of his sight. Gilfredo thought that this man looked and moved no differently from the first time he had seen him. He could see again how much longer one of Madewell's arms was than the other, and thought that he should drop his shovel and run after him and ask why this was so. But he didn't. It wasn't until Gilfredo himself was approaching old age that he woke suddenly one morning with the nigger in his mind, and realized that Madewell Brown had spent his life throwing rocks. After the cafe closed that day, Felix cleaned the kitchen and wiped the tables. Then he walked up the hill to the house where Madewell had lived. The sun had set, and Felix could feel his shirt, which was moist from the heat in the kitchen, cool against his back. He looked at the house and thought it already felt empty. Felix pushed the door open and stepped inside. The mud plaster on the walls inside had been painted white, and over that were drawn so many pictures that for a second Felix felt as though the room were crowded. He shut his eyes, and a soft wave of dizziness washed over him. When he opened them again, he began to turn slowly in a circle. All about him were thousands of paintings. They ran from one wall to the other, even across the surface of the door and above the archway that led into another room. They were painted in black, red, yellow, green, and in colors Felix had never seen. In each painting were 6 children, and from one wall to the next they aged. And as there were so many of these paintings, they seemed to grow old together by the moment. They were drawn at birth, Telesphore said, lying closely together under one blanket. Their faces were clear and smooth, their eyes wide and surprised. Above them was a black sky with stars and a yellow moon. Felix watched them begin to crawl and then walk clumsily, falling into each other. He saw them in trees and in dry arroyos and in groves of scrub oak, always together, and in a boat on a river that flowed flat and was only water. He saw them kiss each other and wrestle in the dirt and throw rocks at cows and start fires that grew too big. He watched them asleep at dawn and in the rain and in snow without coats or shoes. And at the end, with age, the 6 of them sat looking out at the person who had drawn them. Felix saw that in this house Madewell Brown had raised his family, and that when he left them behind. It took Telesphore Ruiz a long time to tell this story to Will. By the end, the night had grown dark and Telesphore's voice sounded like air. Will asked him if he had ever seen the paintings and where in Guadalupe this house was. Telesphore answered that he had seen them just once, but he had never gone back because the sight of them alone in the house made him too sad. He told Will that the house Madewell Brown had lived in was no longer standing. A few years after Madewell left, Horatio Medina bought the land for back taxes. Not long after that, he sold it to the mine, which tore the house down. All that remained now were some old fence posts and broken glass, and pieces of adobe with paint. End of prologue.